My name is Al Whitney.
And my name is Ingrid Castle.
Welcome to In Defense of Humanity. Geez, Ingrid, I actually forgot the date.
It's the 17th of October.
On the 17th?
I mean, September.
It's September. Oh, we're doing really well. We moved right into October. Welcome on the 17th day of September.
Our program is about helping people reawaken to the wonderful qualities of our own species.
Well, accepting and understanding that the current corporate commercial legal structure that both government and business is built upon
is actively seeking to take control of most organic life forms on our planet.
Restoring our unalienable rights and preserving our planet will require
that we, the people, understand what has happened and learn how to empower ourselves as living men and women.
Much of the information we discuss on our show can be found on my website, anticorruptionsociety.com. After this show, links to the material we discussed on our program will be posted on the IDH program links page.
And normally
on that page, I also put a link to the archives, but for some unknown reason, the archives haven't been working for the last week, so I'm hopeful that they'll get them up and running again. Soon. Tonight I'd like to start the show. I'd like to go into UCC, but I'd like to start with a specific example of something that happened recently, which is a challenge from the Medical Board of California. It's actually an accusation by the Medical Board of California against Dr. Bob Sears. Now, Bob Sears gave a medical exemption to a two-year-old. And apparently this exemption was an all-time, all-childhood exemption. And he felt he had medically justified reasons to do that. Well, I'm not surprised that that didn't come to their attention rather quickly. But it did. He did that in April, I believe. And they're just acting on that now. They filed this accusation in September. So it took him a while to figure out how they were going to handle that. But he has written a book, hasn't he, Ingrid, called what, the vaccination book?
I don't actually have the name in front of me because I never got it because it's about, it's not an anti-vaccine book. I'm kind of stick with those pretty much, but he's into an alternative schedule and spacing them out, and he definitely prescribes vaccines and drugs. He is a pediatrician.
Yeah, but I looked at the complaint that they had here. He was also but he was also recommending garlic as one of his treatment regimes.
Yes, he does both.
Yes.
But I believe, actually, it was from 2014. Oh, this is taken a while.
Yes.
That he first saw
That's
the two-year-old. And then it was in 2015 when, we're assuming it's an accident, but a hammer from the father hit the boy's head, and we're assuming this was an accident.
Wait a minute. You're going on too fast here.
I know. Well, the whole thing is has to do with the standard of care. I'm sorry.
Oh, jeez.
Sorry.
Okay. So I'm just thinking about the dates, Ingrid. So they did change the requirements for medical exemptions because you were right about it being 214. So they changed those in 215, I believe. Right? Right. And now they're coming after him. Now, he was probably on their watch list all along, don't you think? Just because he recommended an alternative to their schedule.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. And he wrote that book telling people they could have an alternative, and they don't like that. So I downloaded this thing, and my husband and I went through it and read it. This is their accusation from the medical board. Okay, and the complainant is Kimberly Kirchmeier in her official capacity as the executive director of the Medical Board of California. Okay. Now, in this thing, it's really interesting, people, because I will put this up there. This was a free download to everybody from the LA Times. They were the ones who published it. And, you know, I have to wonder, Ingrid, if they aren't doing that because they're trying to make a point to other doctors and discredit this gentleman as well. I mean, why, normally this stuff doesn't end up in the newspaper, for Pete's sakes.
Well,
right?
You would think so, but he has a reputation.
Yeah, correct.
He spoke out against SB 277, and he was one of the main doctors that they used to speak out opposing SB 277, and he wasn't that strong, frankly.
Yeah. Well, so they're coming after him, and first they identify the parties in these accusations. Most of us have never seen what happens when the medical board goes after a guy's license for negligence, okay? First they name the parties. Then they have two pages. I'm looking at this thing. Two pages on what they perceive to be their jurisdiction. But what's interesting is the first item under jurisdiction says this accusation is brought under the authority of the following laws. All section references are to the Business and Professions Code. So I wanted to bring that to everybody's attention. Notice how it's the Business and Profession Code. And they state specifically restrictions that they have or rules that they have in their code. So this is the California code regarding physicians practicing, licensee, particularly physicians, in their practicing of medicine. When you read that, you start to see that they have incorporated into their statutory code the standard of care. Now, we did a show, Modern Medicine at the Crossroads. That was quite a while back, I agree, that we brought up that wonderful information about exposing the standard of care. And the physician wrote that, there are many good doctors that are absolutely opposed to what they put in that thing, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something they come to by a vote of the physicians. So vaccines was listed in that article, Modern Medicine at the Crossroads, and we can post it if people want to read it. It's lengthy, but it's got a lot of good information. So now we see that they've codified the standard of care. We always kind of wonder how they were going to pull this off. Well, that's how they do it, probably in each state. Each state has probably codified this in the codes that they pass regarding the medical board. And we see this over and over and over. They pass the codes regarding the governing body. Then it's up to the governing body to impose them as if they are laws on the licensees or the general public, the persons.
Well, let me just say that part of the whole standard of care totally ties into insurance, so it's likely that the patient was on some kind of insurance, and so they're citing that he should have done some neurological testing, should have done a physical, so that there was a clear diagnosis based on his, doing this series of tests, both a physical exam and neurological testing, which were not done as part of the standard of care to get a clear diagnosis for insurance reimbursement.
Well, wait, I didn't see.
They're citing.
Did you read this? I did not see any mention of that neurological as
standard. Yeah, that's totally
of care.
On page.
Standard
four.
Of care.
It's page 4 of number 12 of no additional, it was performed, no assessment plans was recorded. That's totally a thing with standard of care that you have to do a specific diagnosis in order to do the codes for insurance reimbursement.
They did not put that in here, though, Ingrid. Now, you and I may know that's...
No, they didn't, but I know that's how it operates.
Correct, but I wanted to focus on what they're putting down on this paper that he'd have to defend. Now, I don't know that they've codified the standard of care that in detail, but I do understand exactly what you're saying about the insurance industry. You're absolutely right. And I'm trying to figure out how they're using their statutory codes to control what he is doing. And so far, they haven't mentioned anything in this document about the insurance company. So they think that they've got, they're going on into negligence. And gross negligence. They're sticking to gross negligence, and that's what they're accusing him of. And it's really, this is really, I had my husband, and I think if you've listened to the show, you know he's a retired physician. And he read this complaint, and they are really reaching to get this guy angry, because the complaint included, and it's not even clear that he did anything wrong with the child and the head injury, but they're including, they have to have three, incidents of negligence, okay? So they're stretching. They must have gone over that chart a million times to find it. They're stretching, and they're adding that he wrote this exemption. They call it a letter. He wrote this exemption in April and didn't put it in the chart. Now, that's one of that. That gave them their three. Incorrect charting. Inadequate charting. Now, do you know how many times? Who puts the stuff in the chart? Not the doctor. The employees who work in the clinic.
Correct.
So they really are stretching on this. But they do go on to talk about the vaccines. This is on page 5. And now we're back to the standard of care per their code. In the sense that they feel that this is codified in the state of California. The standard of care requires that a physician, this is number 17, on page 5, that a physician evaluating a patient for a possible reaction to vaccines obtain a detailed history of the vaccines previously received, as well as the reaction or reactions that occurred. Based on that information, the physician should provide an evidence-based recommendation for future immunizations. Respondent was grossly negligent and departed from the standard of care. He did not obtain the basic information for decision-making prior to determining to exclude the possibility of future vaccines, leaving both patients, JG, the patient's mother, and his future contacts at risk for preventable and communicable diseases. Now, Ingrid, you know what they're doing? I know you figured this out in a no time flat. They're trying to say because he had a reaction to two vaccines, this doctor can't accept him from all future vaccines.
Yes.
That's where they're going with this. And you and I have noticed that they've got all these forms where you're supposed to say which vaccines you'll accept and which you won't. They're gonna take them on one by one. I don't think they're going to allow a medical exemption that doesn't take them on one by one with a reaction to that shot or the contents of in that shot. What do you think? I don't think they're going to accept a blanket one. Do you?
I actually don't think so. Because if you look at the schedule, you know, he had a reaction at 2 months and at 3 months. Generally, you don't get vaccines at 3 months. You get them at 2 months and 4 months. So, then this is all just reported by the mother. We don't know from this whether he was accessing the medical records from a previous pediatrician. To ascertain what the actual reactions were, what the vaccines given to the infant are. We don't have enough information. Generally, there's, in every state, there's the tracking registry. So he should just be able to access the tracking registry. It's right there, a history of the young little boy receiving all these different vaccines, so he could see what the boy got at 2 months and at 3 months.
Right.
But at that point, most of them are covered except like the MMR.
But you know what? That's not what SB 277 did. And that's where they've got him. I think that's what his attorney should argue. Because SB 277 translated into the medical exemption, the code regarding vaccines, Ingrid. And they stated, they didn't say anything about specific vaccines. What's interesting, I didn't see his letter, nor did you, but I read their interpretation of his letter or his medical exemption, and their interpretation of his medical exemption completely, absolutely went along with the criteria in the code that came from SB 277. It may have even been there longer. For a medical exemption, he met it perfectly. So what they've done, and SB 277 and the statutory codes that resulted said nothing about standard of care. Nothing.
Right. But if you look at number 23, it says specifically respondent did not maintain a copy of the letter he prepared exempting the patient from future vaccination. So that he didn't document that. I mean,
that's
the letter was written, and they're assuming the letter. Someone has a copy of this letter.
Oh, I'm sure they have a copy of it,
but it wasn't in the record.
But that was that they needed. They really wanted three, and the fact that there was a missing document in the chart gave them number three.
Right.
Right. I mean, in and of itself, they could just say, "Well, show us the letter." You know, somebody neglected to put it on the chart. Right.
Right.
But since they're going after him for negligence, gross negligence, I might add, they needed at least three counts, and that they're going to use that letter, which is nonsensical.
Right.
But again, he probably filed. That's when you've got these two codes. You've got the codes that include standard of care that are established for the medical board and the licensee. Then you move into the other direction, and you've got the code for the medical exemption that doesn't require standard of care.
Right.
So, it looks to me like they really are kind of roasting him. The third cause for discipline is failure to maintain adequate and accurate records.
Okay. Well, I think it's not just the physical. When the patient was seen later on, there was this injury, there was no clear what they're saying adequate physical examination. But I think this ties into CPS. There was enough red flags to warrant that he asked more detailed questions, and that he just wrote no residual marks was not a detailed enough examination.
Well, but no, I mean, I talked to my husband
about that. I mean, I'm just being the devil's advocate here. I'm sorry.
No, I talked to my husband about that. He said, well, I'll tell you what he said.
Okay, when we come back from a break, you're listening to In Defense of Humanity. Please stay tuned.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria from totally neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promotes stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
And we're talking right now about the accusations that have been made against Dr. Bob Sears, a pediatrician in California. And it would appear that he's not guilty of anything other than he followed the statutory codes for a medical exemption to the T, but he is guilty of that paper, that piece of paper not being in that file. Even the incident that they mentioned, the other gross negligence, you know, I talked to my husband about that. He says, that's not gross negligence. You see the kid 2 weeks later. He's acting normal. You call CPS, which he did, and they dismissed it. He called for an emergency family evaluation, and they closed the case.
Yeah, so, I saw that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he really didn't, you know. I'm sorry, my husband, a hammer hit my husband, my kid on the head 2 weeks ago, and he's okay now. Well, you think the doctor should then put the kid through all these complicated tests if the kid's normal and it's been 2 weeks and there's no marks? I mean, that was just a witch hunt, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But they did, they certainly nailed him for the paperwork, didn't they?
Yes, they certainly did.
Okay, so they're doing it with a statutory code. This is what they want for a punishment. Revoking or suspending the physician's certificate number, that would be his license. Revoking, suspending, or denying approval of his authority to supervise physician assistants. Well, heck, that's no loss, right? Number three, if placed on probation, ordering him to pay the board the costs of probation and monitoring. And that's the kind of punishment that they want to mete out to this bad boy. But again, you know, if depending on who told him what to put on that medical exemption or where he got his information, he absolutely met the codes for a medical exemption in the school system. And I'm assuming this medical exemption was for this child in daycare, don't you think? He was 2.
Unlikely.
Yeah. So I don't know where this is going to go. I think that just the fact that this complaint showed up in the LA Times, when that almost never happens, when it's unsubstantiated, this is just like an accusation. He hasn't even been to the hearing yet, you know? He hasn't had his day to be heard. And yet, they published it in the LA Times?
Right.
Now, I don't think that's a mistake. I think they did that on purpose.
Right. And it's, you know, the whole thing is done by the Deputy Attorney General for the state of California. It's the one who is bringing...
he's processing the paperwork, but the charges are coming from the executive director of the medical board.
Correct, but I mean, that's who represents, those are the attorneys, you know, the state of California. But anyway.
Yeah, so the key is you don't even know if there were doctors who pored over this chart. You know, I have some questions about a lot of this. Who wrote this is my question, because it does appear to be written by lawyers. They're calling him doctors don't write like this, okay? People need to know that. Doctors don't use these terms. Respondents, licensee, you know?
Yeah.
This is a bunch of lawyers who put this together, and they did so at somebody's instruction.
Right. It's the Attorney General of California. They were the ones that put it together. Attorneys for complainant.
Okay.
It's right at the top. It's the Deputy Attorney General, Trina Saunders, and then... You know, she's doing it on behalf of the supervising attorney general and the attorney general.
Okay.
They always give the lackeys, you know, the deputy, you know. That's Trina Saunders is the main person that probably wrote this whole thing up. You know, and then just had it go by her superiors, and it was filed. That's it. Okay, we're coming up to a break. You're listening to In Defense of Humanity on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Please stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The 5 tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocolon therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org. 800-326-2001.
Angioprim can unclog blocked arteries and improve blood flow in all parts of your body. Angioprim is oral chelation. Easy, simple, liquid oral chelation. You take it with juice before breakfast and forget about it. Angioprim works fast, unlike old-fashioned chelation that takes hours. Just log on to angioprim.com. That's Angioprim, A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M, angioprim.com. Angioprim users say they have more energy, more strength, more endurance. Increased circulation and blood flow will make all your body parts work better. Log on to angioprim.com to get more information on how you can get started and start feeling better, having fun, and doing more again. Lots more. Talk to a trained Angioprim consultant. Call Angioprim toll-free at 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221. Or log on for complete information. Angioprim.com. That's angioprim.com. Find out how Angioprim can work for you. Get the facts about Angioprim at angioprim.com.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
In defense of humanity. So I'm going to read you a little bit about what the code says regarding a medical exemption, and people will start to understand how this guy stumbled into this mess. If he had someone advise him based on a code, here's what the code says. If the parent or guardian files with the governing authority, a written statement by a licensed physician to the effect that the physical condition of the child is such, or medical circumstances relating to the child are such, that immunization is not considered safe, indicating the specific nature and probable duration of the medical condition or circumstances, including, but not limited to, family medical history, for which the physician does not recommend immunization, that child shall be exempt from the requirements of Chapter 1 to the extent indicated by the physician's statement, unquote. Nothing in there says that they have to justify each vaccine. They can only have an exemption for per vaccine. Nothing in there says anything about coordinating this medical exemption with whatever they call their standard of care. So right. I even went to the California Department of Public Health website and looked on their link for medical exemption. It was more vague than what I just read you. So had this gentleman, this physician, looked at either this code or what they tell him to do at the California Department of Health, he met all their criteria.
Well, what I have is from, it's a temporary, that the child may be temporarily excluded from the school or institution until the local health officer is satisfied that the child is no longer at risk of developing, oh, I'm sorry, I'm thinking, a lot of times it's a temporary, that, wait.
Where are you reading from? I'm reading from, 120370, code.
Yeah, 120370, I jumped to the bottom. A lot of times it's a temporary thing. See, she did a permanent exemption for childhood while he was a child.
Nowhere did it say that he couldn't do that.
Yeah.
He said he just has to...
Oh, yeah, right.
And even in the Public Health of California, they said they have to specify the time. Now, this guy met these criteria. And all of a sudden, they're saying you didn't do it right. And now you're guilty of gross negligence.
That's true.
So, you know, I hope his lawyer sees that and starts to say, get your laws straight. Mm-hmm. If you're going to allow a medical exemption, get your laws straight. Now, they didn't want to put this down, I don't think. Maybe, Ingrid, you're right. Maybe they didn't want to admit that they're installing the standard of care based on insurance companies, so they didn't put it in here. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
See, they're not supposed to be codifying insurance company rules.
Right.
So I think the guys got roasted. I don't know, but I do think that I do think they're going to try to punish him and make an example of him.
Right.
So the people who say it should be easy to get a medical exemption are going to find out it's not.
Well, that would they'd have to come back next year and make it more stringent, but this year he seems like he should be able to get off pretty easy if his attorney has any moxie at all.
Yeah, but it seems to me that there was in that lawsuit that Tim Boland wrote about, there was one or more parents that had children who had been injured by immunization, and they were not going to consider that. Because, again, well, maybe that shot injured them. And their theory is, well, just because that shot injured them that time doesn't mean they'll be injured again by the next shot.
Plus they're given multiple shots usually at a visit, so it's hard to pinpoint which one was the culprit. And if it wasn't just coincidental, that's what they love to say all the time.
Right, you're right about multiple shots. That's right. Exactly. Good point. How would they know which one then?
Exactly. Or which component of the shot he's reacting to. You know.
That's correct. So they have this thing set up and they plan on doing this vaccination program, and I'm pretty sure that this is going to take place in a lot further than just California. Mm-hmm. They're making proposals to do something different in Ohio. Now, what can I say? They can use this guy as an example across the whole country. And they like to do that. They like to take one incident and then use it as a justification all over the place for years. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about when they passed that Supreme Court decision in 1944, Prince versus Massachusetts. Well, 1944, Ingrid, there were hardly any vaccines. And in 1944, Big Pharma did not have immunity from liability.
Right.
Notice how, so they're taking the circumstances that were around in 44, and they're citing it as justification for what they do in 2016. Mm-hmm. And they're getting by with it because the Supreme Court can just refuse to hear any challenge. And they do.
Business as usual.
Yes, and they do. All they have to say is, no, we're not going to hear that. People keep thinking there's some justice system. There isn't, folks. You know, the Supreme Court can elect to hear or not hear anything they want. And if there's a political agenda and there's a constitutional challenge that wants the Supreme Court to hear, they can turn it down, as John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute discovered.
Right. I mean, I've seen some beautifully crafted writs of certiorari that have been turned down that yeah. are actually very important issues that need to be addressed. Right. But, yeah, if they don't want to hear it, then business as usual.
Right.
Especially if it's a clear constitutional challenge that their decision would expose the underbelly of the corporate beast, they don't want to hear it.
Correct. Absolutely. And they want to keep the facade, even with these lawyers, because John Whitehead's case was based on Constitution. They want to keep the facade going that the Constitution is the law of the land, when it is not. And, you know, that brings me to the frustration I think a lot of people feel when they see everybody yelling about their rights and complaining, well, nobody was harmed, and I have a freedom of speech right, or I have this right, or I have that right. And people have been yelling about this for years. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, behind the scenes, the Uniform Commercial Code emerged as the law of the land long time ago. I'd like to read a little bit, because this is important. It gives people a little bit of history of how this happened. A lot of people go on these shows, and I appreciate their research, and they go into history about the country and the Civil War and the 14th Amendment. But this book called Who is Running America, this is a booklet that you can get, download for free on the anticorruptionsociety.com. It's on the home page. If you scroll down, you'll see a picture of it on the right side. And it's called Who is Running America, The Bankruptcy of America, The Corporate United States, and the New World Order. I'd like to read a bit about this for listeners who are unfamiliar with it. And it's starting to believe a lot of people are unfamiliar with this bankruptcy that took place in 1933. By 1938, the corporate federal government had the true bankruptcy case they had been looking for. Now the bankruptcy that had been declared back in 1930 could be upheld and administered. That is why the Supreme Court had to be stacked and made corrupt from within. The new players on the Supreme Court fully understand that they had to destroy all other case law that had been established prior to 1938. The federal government had to have a case to destroy all precedent, all appearance, and even the statute of law itself. That is, the statutes at large had to be perverted. They finally got their case in Erie versus Tompkins. It was right after that case that the American Law Institute and the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, listed right in the front of the UCC, began creating the Uniform Commercial Code that is on our backs today. Let us quote directly from the preface of the official text of the Uniform Commercial Code, 12th edition. Quote, "The code was originally approved by its sponsors and the American Bar Association in 1952 and was revised in 1958 to incorporate a number of changes that had been recommended by the New York Law Revision Commission and other agencies. Subsequent amendments that were deemed desirable in light of experience under the code were approved by the permanent editorial board in 1962 and 1966. The above named groups and associations of private lawyers got together and started working on the Uniform Commercial Code. It was somewhere between 1938 and 1940. I don't recall, but by the early 40s and during the war, this committee was working to form the UCC and getting it ready to go to market. The UCC is the Law Merchants Code for the administration of the bankruptcy. The UCC is now the law of the land as far as the courts are concerned. This legal committee of lawyers put everything, negotiable instruments, securities, sales, contracts, and the whole mess under the UCC. That is where the uniform word comes from. It means it was uniform from state to state as well as being uniform with the District of Columbia. It doesn't mean you didn't have the uniform instrument laws on the books before this time. It means the laws were not uniform from state to state. By the middle 60s, every state had passed the UCC into law. The states had no choice but to adopt newly formed Uniform Commercial Code as the law of the land. The states fully understood they had to administrate bankruptcy. Washington, D.C. adopted the Uniform Commercial Code in 1963, just 6 weeks after President John F. Kennedy was killed. This is so important, Ingrid, for people to understand that the UCC is the law of the land.
Now, right, and, you know, we see in a lot of state statutes some things that are prior to the 60s, but they're pretty much ignored. They leave this stuff on the books, but it's never seems to be enforceable.
Well, and the courts are administering the bankruptcy. So you go in there, and that's what they're there to do,
right?
And we walk in there thinking they're there to administer justice.
No.
Okay, to continue. Again, we're reading from Who is Running America. This is on page 23. The international bankers told these various countries that they were now in a state of bankruptcy. The countries had been taken over by the creditor bankers, and there was no choice but for all these participating countries to declare bankruptcy. If they didn't agree to declare bankruptcy, the bankers threatened to collapse the economies and thereby put the countries back into the depression like the one which they were just emerging. The bankers made an offer they couldn't refuse. To review and elaborate, in 1930, there was a worldwide depression, and we don't talk much about it anymore. The bankers said, look, you can do it either of two ways, the easy way or the hard way. You just accept the bankruptcy, and we'll let you out of the depression. If you don't, you're on your own. So all the countries involved agreed, because they realized that the international bankers had them by the throat. The countries therefore agreed that over a period of several years that they would pass statutes and legislation for the implementation of the bankruptcy in favor of the international bankers. Now, it would probably be correct to say that the key bankers were the Rothschilds and their agents by way of Rockefeller, by way of the Federal Reserve Bank. Who the bankers were is immaterial. The fact remains that there was an international bankruptcy and an international conspiracy to cover it up. There was a banking creditor who made the offer. The countries accepted the offer in order to enable the representative countries to continue without revolution and to allow the politicians to remain comfortably in place. Under a delusion of solvency, the countries were allowed to continue to operate as though they were solvent. Well, in fact, the representative countries were bankrupt. Now, all of this talk about, you know, the Constitution and holy moly, what do people not understand about bankruptcy? I mean, maybe people don't understand. When you're bankrupt, they take your assets.
Right.
I mean, what can I say?
Well, this is the whole snare that he talks about, you know, citizens and residents, and he continues, because it is a diabolical plan, what they did. And, it was very well orchestrated, and people were pretty dumbed down because they had, well, they had control of the media.
Well, they still do. How many people know about this bankruptcy?
They've heard about it, but they certainly don't understand the ramifications.
No. And it is critical if you want to understand the legal system.
It is. Absolutely. Okay, we're coming up on a break. You're listening to In Defense of Humanity on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Please stay tuned.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and, of course, you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANARepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
In Defense of Humanity. I wanted to read just a little bit more about the UCC, and then we'll be thrilled to take callers to contribute their ideas on this. But, okay, this is on page 25. The Geneva Agreement in 1930 was done by treaty. The bankruptcy was not done by legislation. That means it was a private treaty. People don't know that. The agreement came first, signed in secrecy. Then Congress began to pass legislation to fulfill the bankruptcy obligation that was required by the treaty. Legislation being passed by Congress was henceforth and is thereby bankruptcy legislation. When cases come before the courts could make decisions based on the new controlling law of bankruptcy. It had nothing to do with constitutional rights. Now, any case brought in is under the new bankruptcy law and is not considered as a true constitutional case. It is now a bankruptcy case, as distinct from but cleverly disguised as a constitutional case. So we talked about this general, the Uniform Commercial Code, construction of Uniform Commercial Code to promote its purposes and policies, applicability of supplemental principles and law. This is UCC 1-103. We have it on our website. It's listed on the source document page as UCC Article 1-General Provisions. And this was put in place in 2001, which I found interesting. But that's what's in place right now, which is why we see so many more draconian laws. But I want to read this because this takes us right to where we are today. And it's important that we understand, do we have rights? And if we don't have rights, what do we have? Okay, A, and I read this before, but people need to keep thinking about it because it's completely different than what we've been taught in school. That is for sure. The Uniform Commercial Code must be liberally construed and applied to promote its underlying purposes and policies, which are to simplify, clarify, and modernize the law governing commercial transactions, to permit the continued expansion of commercial practices through custom, usage, and agreement of the parties, and to make uniform the law among the various jurisdictions. Now, remember when I read on that accusation, they were against Dr. Sears. On the first page, they were quoting the Business and Profession Code. They have put that in commerce, people. It's all in commerce now. Item B on this 1-103, again, general provisions of UCC, unless displaced by the particular provision of the UCC, the principles of law and equity, including the law merchant and the law relative to capacity to contract. I'll finish that up after the commercial.
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The five tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocholine therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org. 800-326-2001.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.